to the third case of the day, the estate of Suskovich versus Anthem Health. Mr. Waterfield.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court. My name is Mark Waterfield, and I'm an attorney with Dan Picard, Newman & Kleiman in Indianapolis, Indiana. I represent the estate of Anthony Suskovich in his contention that a trial is necessary to determine whether Mr. Suskovich should have been considered an employee by Anthem and its co-employer, Trasis, in this current case. For 13 years, Mr. Suskovich drove to Anthem Wellpoint in Indianapolis, took out his pass card, passed his card in security through his parking lot, took his parking space, went up to his office, went into his cubicle, sat at his Anthem-provided desk, chair, file cabinet, two computers provided by Anthem, everything that he needed, all the tools of the trade that Mr. Suskovich needed to perform his services for 13 years as a computer programmer. Anthem, during this entire time, considered Mr. Suskovich to be an independent contractor. Even though as Mr. Suskovich looked out over this large room with cubicles, virtually everyone else there was an employee. As he looked across from his cubicle and saw his boss sitting in his office, he was certainly an employee. And these bosses, Mr. Veach and Ms. Snap, directed Mr. Suskovich often and routinely in his job as a computer programmer.
There's nothing to support the contention that he viewed himself as an employee, though. He billed the company for his services as an independent contractor. He was paid as an independent contractor. He repeatedly declined full-time employment with the company because he could make more money as an independent contractor, computer consultant.
Well, Your Honor,
almost every indicia of the analytical approach to determining when someone is an employee and when an independent contractor falls on the independent contractor side of the line here.
Not at all, Your Honor, if I may. Much of that evidence that was presented is inadmissible, pursuant to the dead man statute. Unfortunately, Mr. Suskovich died and is not with us now. Some of the other evidence that they point to is really items that they found on Mr. Suskovich's computer. Anthem doesn't know for certain that, for example, the Anthem Virginia contract was actually prepared by Mr. Suskovich, and it wasn't signed by anyone. The Virginia folks didn't see that contract, didn't have that contract. The statements are self-serving statements that are violative of the dead man's rule under Indiana law, and they're simply inadmissible.
Well, the 1099s are admissible, and
they are.
Don't lie.
They are. And the 1099s emanate from Anthem and Trasis. And I would submit to Your Honor that an individual who receives a 1099, even though they have been wrongfully designated as an independent contractor, it is not their burden to file a protest with the IRS or to change the designation that was given to them by the principal, in this case Anthem and Wellpoint, and then later Trasis. Those parties should have known better. They should have given him the correct documentation. And, in fact, the documentation that Trasis did give Mr. Suskovich from 2001 forward often referred to him as an employee. In the agreement between Trasis and Mr. Suskovich, 9 times he is referred to in his employment as an employee. And the testimony from the Trasis individuals was that there was really no distinction in his contract and the contracts that were provided to other employees of Trasis. As a matter of fact, the Trasis individuals testified that everyone else that they had under their engagement was either an employee of Trasis or an employee of their principal, such as Anthem. Only Mr. Suskovich didn't have withholding taxes taken out, was designated as an independent contractor. Only Mr. Suskovich and the entire Trasis organization was not provided with those opportunities for benefits that were provided to other employees.
What, were there any others working that did the similar work that were considered employees versus independent contractors? In other words, what Mr. Suskovich did, was someone else doing that and being considered an employee or an independent contractor?
Absolutely. Mr. Suskovich was in the process of training his replacement. And
well,
that individual was a,
but an independent contractor could do that as well as an employee.
Well, she was, but her focus was to do what he was doing.
Well, I suppose the company could convert from an Mr. Waterfall from an independent contractor to an employee at some point in time.
They should have.
I'm not criticizing the point. I'm just. But you know, on this 1099 thing, didn't Mr. Suskovich, dealing with the tax ramifications, declare business deductions and consider himself a sole proprietor?
Certainly, because he had no other choice. That was the choice that was given to him by the principal, for whom he was going to work over 40 hours a week, for whom he was being provided documentation that said comp time, documentation that said employee agreement, and documentation that referred to overtime for Mr. Suskovich. All indicia of him being wrongfully classified, and I would urge this court to consider that it is the principal in this situation who should be held to the standard that they should properly classify the individual. And from the very beginning.
Does the record reflect the educational level of Mr. Suskovich?
Mr. Suskovich just had a high school education and then computer training after that. The record does reflect in an evaluation that was provided by Traces, and when you look at this document, it clearly is just set out as an evaluation. He's treated as a computer programmer, and that is the designation that is given to him in this situation. They also, at K4 of the appendix, Traces provided Mr. Suskovich with employee expenses, reimbursing him as an employee. What I think is important for the court to recognize is that in such cases of independent contractor, employee, this court has ruled that determination of the status of an employee as independent contractor is a question of fact. Unless all of the factors go in one direction, it is a question of fact. And Your Honor's first question, having to do with the tax forms and the indicia, that's one factor. We hotly dispute that factor. My client's widow testified that no, Mr. Suskovich told him the opposite. But that is placing that one factor at far too great of level. There are numerous other factors. Mr. Suskovich was paid by the hour. And under Indiana law, the Moberly versus Day case, the Indiana Supreme Court looked at a similar circumstance. And they said, well, this farmer was paid by the job. He wasn't paid by the hour. You get the job done, you get paid. That's the way independent contractors are paid.
Oh, a lot of them are paid by the hour.
Your Honor.
I assert that an independent contractor can't be paid by the hour.
And I would not assert that in and of itself is an indicia that is final. However, the Indiana Supreme Court said it's one other factor in Indiana's 10-factor test that would go towards employee status. And not independent contractor status.
Lawyers are paid by the hour, aren't they? I mean,
well, they are paid by the hour, and at times they're employees, at times they're independent contractors. That is true. They are paid by the job at times as well, Your Honor. But in this particular circumstance, I would suggest to you that the accounting for the hours that was required, the accounting in the form of comp time and in the form of he was getting time off like a vacation. As if he were taking a vacation. The emails between he and his boss, Ms. Snap, in this regard, clearly show this. Mr. Suskovich was disciplined for being tardy. Mr. Suskovich was told at L4 in an email from Pat Foley of Traces, you need to be getting in the office at 9:30 in the morning. You need to not be tardy to work. You need to be attending these weekly meetings. He was disciplined in the same fashion as would have been an employee. And taking those facts, it is clear that a trial is necessary to judge the credibility of these witnesses and to view whether he should have been designated as an employee or as an independent contractor. Clearly, all of the factors do not point in one direction. That simply is not the case.
There was a break in WellPoint's use of Mr. Suskovich, as I understand it, in, I think it was 1999.
Yes, a very brief break.
Right, I mean, up to that point, he had been working on limited duration contracts on special projects, had billed weekly for his services, was paid on an hourly basis, was his income was reported on the 1099 forms, not a W-2, and then he became too expensive, apparently, and so they terminated his services, and then there was a special project that came up, and they needed him back again, but by that point, they had a different arrangement in place for independent contractors, and they had to work through traces.
It was a very brief break, Your Honor. I would submit to you that the Lauritsen case of this Seventh Circuit regarding seasonal employees reflects that breaks do not necessarily mean that the individual is an independent contractor.
My point is that when they brought him back in, they had to bring him back in through traces, and if he had been an employee, that would not have been necessary because Traces was their preferred vendor program company, and all outside contractors had to come in to work for the company through Traces, as I understand the structure of the program. And if he had been an employee, that would not have been necessary.
But, Your Honor, the documentation is shoddy at best. The Anthem now saying, well, he only worked for 6 months or 3 months at a time. There's no documentation to that. These are post hoc rationalizations. And to say, well, now you have to work for Traces, and here's this agreement where it says you're an employee nine times in the agreement, the documentation is very, very poor in that regard. And I see that my time is over.
The documents also, the contracts themselves, also use the term independent contractor.
The title. The title says independent contractor, and then nine places in the agreement, it says employment agreement. It has a covenant not to compete, which in my view is more indicative of an employee as opposed to an independent contractor.
Is it really a non-compete covenant or just a use of confidential materials?
No, there's a non-compete in the agreement, I do believe. He's not to work for their customers. And they promptly violated that, all of the parties. Thank you, Your Honor. I would urge this court to reverse and remand and reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal.
All right, thank you, Mr. Waterfield. Mr. Kroll? Oh, Ms. Yerkes. Oh, I'm sorry.
No troubles.
I misread that.
May it please the court. My name is Ken Yerkes again, counsel. I'm here representing the defendants below, which the district court referred to as WellPoint Anthem. So I'll refer to them in that way in my argument. I will use 10 minutes. Mr. Kroll will argue on behalf of Traces using the remaining 5 minutes. The district court's significant on page 15 of her decision. She was guided by the following quote from the Stone case, Stone versus Pinkerton Farms, where the court held, whereas here the parties define their relationship as that of an independent contractor principal, which was clearly the case here, and the facts of their relationship support that conclusion, the court will not interfere with the intent of the parties. And from there she began her analysis. And the opening decision, the opening sentence of her decision reads, Anthony Suskovich did not like filing tax returns or paying income taxes. That is why we're here today, Your Honors, because the IRS has been pursuing Mr. Suskovich for back taxes, which he owed and his spouse owed for years, where they even failed to file a tax return. Ms. Suskovich, representing the estate and plaintiff here, filed for innocent spouse status and was denied. What is remarkable about this case, I think, is the intent of the party really is absolutely irrebuttable, in part because of Mr. Suskovich's own sworn statements prior to his death and all of the documents he created. In contrast to any of the other cases that have been cited to Your Honors, there is nobody during his life that had a greater incentive to claim he was an employee and not an independent contractor than Mr. Suskovich. He was being audited by the IRS while he was alive after having sworn on certain documents that he had a status of independent contractor. Even assuming, for purposes of argument, that what Mr. Waterfield says is true, which is not supported by the record, that up to that point he'd felt some pressure. When he was in the room with the IRS agent talking about the $100,000 that he owed, there was a perfect opportunity and incentive for him to say, you know what, I'm not really an independent contractor, I'm an employee, you need to talk to Anthem WellPoint because they're the ones that didn't make the payments. He didn't do that. So not just opportunity, but incentive. And we've identified in the IRS agent's notes in our short appendix at 14, page 2, where he quotes Mr. Susovich as saying, "I'm a contractor." He computed his taxes as back taxes for the IRS as an independent contractor. Again, despite having an opportunity to make a claim and file what I think is the SS-8 documentation with the government saying my status was incorrect, the employer had it wrong, he was in there arguing for his status as an independent contractor. Why? The record is also crystal clear as to why. He needed the money. The district court specifically notes in her decision, and the record fully supports this, that he had an extravagant lifestyle. He could not live on a WellPoint Anthem's employee's salary of $70,000. He had, by the record, 9 cars, 3 boats, a 15,000-square-foot home with a bowling alley. The pictures of the home are at SA-15. Which was not going to be supportable at 70. It may have been supportable at 200,000, although his failure to file tax returns would cause that to be somewhat in doubt. He also wanted to be an independent contractor because he was making all of the business deductions that Your Honor identified when counsel for appellant was up here. $22,000 in 1 year, in 2004, including deductions for advertising, vehicles, depreciation, legal expenses, office expenses, meals and entertainments. This was a way to lower his taxes. He's an independent contractor. He wants to be that. Why? More money, more deductions. In contrast to all of the other cases, including the Loretson case, which dealt, by the way, was evaluated under the FLSA, under a different standard, under the economic reality standard imposed by that statute, where you're trying to determine whether migrants who are economically dependent upon pickle producers were employees. This was a gentleman who earned $200,000 a year and who assiduously attempted at every turn to document himself as an independent contractor because he needed to be an independent contractor. He characterized himself on every resume and every document in his own hand as an independent contractor or a consultant, including putting his company's name into imaging through which he did his consulting, as the company that was invoicing the ultimate customer. And you recall that at the time that he was told by WellPoint Anthem that his services would not be re-upped in December 2005, he prepared another resume to give to whoever he would next be a jobber for that said, "I've been an independent contractor with WellPoint Anthem. My company's in the imaging. I'd like to do contract or consulting for you." There is just nothing in this record from Mr. Susovich that would support in any way the way he drafted his invoices, the way he characterized himself, his sworn statements, which the authority we've cited the court, would show that his estate is estopped from now claiming that he believed otherwise. All of it, clearly and overwhelmingly, as the district court identified, demonstrates that he viewed himself, intended for himself to be an independent contractor. Anthem, by its conduct, unambiguously demonstrated that it believed him to be a contractor, wanted him to be a contractor, including going through Trasis. Leave it to my co-counsel to argue the issues over the Trasis agreement and the language which Mr. Waterfall adverted to.
Counsel, this is sort of an odd use of this particular agency doctrine, it seems to me. Usually we see this doctrine in cases involving claims of third parties who are seeking to hold a principal liable for the torts of the agent. And so the independent contractor employee distinction matters in that context to the third party as far as who can be pursued for a tort. This is a first party claim. And it seems to me that the multiple factors that go into the analysis perhaps should be weighed a little differently in a case like this, and that the claims that the purported employee is making should be focused more closely on the documents that were submitted to the IRS and what kind of status the taxpayer, the first party here, the party claiming to be an employee, not an independent contractor, ought to matter more in this context. Is there anything wrong with that analysis?
No, I think it's absolutely correct. In looking at the case law, that his sworn statements to the IRS, the commitments that he made, the averments that he made while he was alive, are the most significant evidence and are the best evidence of intent, especially on this record, especially given the arm's length relationship that he had with WellPoint Anthem through all of these years. You know, with respect to the multiple jobs, Your Honor was correct when asking opposing counsel was here at the podium about the multiple jobs. There were times when he had three different deals going on, three different arrangements with different entities within the WellPoint Anthem company, unbeknownst to the other entities. This was a person who was always, as in the record, looking for the next job, the next opportunity. And when his rate was reduced through Trasis, he approached WellPoint to look for additional work so he could make up for some of the diminished rate. He also, when jobs were concluding, you know, went out and went to old contacts to try to determine whether there was work on the horizon. But there are multiple overlapping opportunities that he would not have been able to pursue had he been an employee. And his sworn statements, his tax records that he submitted to the federal government here, clearly are the best evidence. And as I said, they're the only reason we're here today arguing about this, is because the IRS was investigating his nonpayment of taxes. The estate doesn't want to be held accountable for that liability. They're trying to push it off on WellPoint Anthem posthumously. It's not acceptable. It's not supported by the record. With respect to the dead man statute, just briefly, as we argued in our brief, the Federal Rule of Evidence 601 would apply here. This was, and Judge Barker analyzed this as a common issue of state and federal law as to whether the elements of independent contractor were met. According to the estate of Klopek, in that case, it's not inappropriate for the federal court to use the more permissive evidentiary rule, and that would apply here as well. But I think just as importantly, with respect to this dead man statute, you have to appreciate what's going on here. The only reason the evidence was proffered from WellPoint witnesses, because I would agree with Your Honor that this is really a document case. The documents nail this 100%. But the spouse offered some testimony, which we believe was inadmissible hearsay, about Mr. Suskovich's view of whether or not he was an employee. When they opened the door to that, when they offered that statement allegedly by Mr. Suskovich, we had the right and the opportunity under fundamental principles of fairness in the rules to offer a rebuttal to that. And in the Indiana case cited by the plaintiffs on this particular issue, State Farm, in that case, the court noted, and this is on page 527, that neither the express language of the dead man statute nor accepted concepts of fairness should preclude application of the statutes so long as no statements made by the decedent are admitted through depositions or public records made during his life. Well, they did admit, or they tried to have put forth an admission through the spouse that he believed that Anthem believed he was an employee, so they pried his lips open. We had every right to defend ourselves. And obviously, there's also, as we note in our brief, it was, if any error, it was harmless, because there were other methods of proving that Mr. Suskovich had declined employment through testimony not objected to by Mr. Suskovich's estate, specifically the statements by Mr. Longdon, in our defendant's appellant's appendix 10, paragraph 6, and also an email Eberhard sent, which they have not objected to, in our short appendix at 11, page 5, where Mr. Suskovich said he would consider actual employment if Eberhard could provide the salary Suskovich wanted, again emphasizing the economic need of Mr. Suskovich to be an independent contractor. I believe my 10 minutes is expired.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Yerkes. Mr. Kroll.
Thank you. May it please the Court, David Kroll for Trasis. It is undisputed that the only reason Trasis had any relationship at all with Mr. Suskovich is because WellPoint had an unmanageable number of IT providers went to a preferred vendor program, and Traces was only one of about 25 or 30 of those preferred vendors. And our customer, WellPoint, asked us to subcontract with Mr. Suskovich so WellPoint could continue the relationship they had with him, which Traces understood from the beginning to be an independent contractor relationship. Traces understood that Mr. Suskovich wanted to continue that as an independent contractor relationship, and Traces had every intention of continuing it as an independent contractor relationship. They were sloppy, no question about it. They were smart enough to change the caption on an agreement to make it independent contractor agreement because everybody knew that's what the intent was. They were not as careful as business people as we would have liked them to have been as lawyers, and they didn't go through the rest of the document and change the references to employment to independent contractor status. In the context of this case, we think at the end of the day, that means nothing. And we think the trial court did the right thing and looked to that agreement as only one factor and looked to all the other evidence and said it did that in its opinion. It looked to a wide variety of evidence to conclude that the parties intended to be that the relationship would be an independent contractor relationship. And let me say a thing about the standard of review in this court, is I don't think either of other counsel addressed it. As I read the Knight and Mazzi cases, where the court below applied the correct legal standard, and I don't think there's any dispute that the 10-factor test is the factor, and this was decided on cross motions for summary judgment. You know, Mr. Waterfield wants there to be a trial now, but he filed a motion for summary judgment below saying there were no disputed facts, they should win. It was an employment relationship. We filed a motion for summary judgments as well. Trial court concluded an independent contractor relationship. We read the Knight and Mazzi cases to say where the court applies the correct legal standard and the only dispute is the application of facts to that standard, you review for clear error, and there was no clear error in this case. Mr. Waterfill claims that Mr. Suskovich was disciplined, which is absolutely contrary to the sworn response to interrogatories that the estate provided, which is at page C18 of the appendix, for the period from 1996 to 2006, which covers most of the WellPoint relationship and all of the Traces relationship. I quote, Mr. Suskovich was never disciplined. That is their sworn statement. That is correct. The argument now that he was disciplined is simply false. There is no dispute that Traces had essentially no control and very little contact with Mr. Suskovich for the five-year period. We rarely had contact with him. We occasionally passed along a message from our client, WellPoint, where they wanted him there regular work hours so he could be available to the people whose he was working with on the projects. We request affirmance and, again, ask this court to find no clear error. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kroll. Mr. Waterfield.
Thank you, Your Honor. If we are to take the district court's first sentence and say that's the rule, Tony Suskovich didn't like paying taxes, well, then we'll just signify everybody, either employee or independent contractor, it doesn't matter. There's no liability. Who likes paying taxes? It's absurd. Mr. Yerkes has gone through rank speculation. Mr. Suskovich had 9 boats and 3 cars or whatever. It is rank speculation. Do we have an independent contractor rule for people who like boats and cars and somebody else who has a bowling alley in their basement? So what? They have no knowledge of his other resources. They have no knowledge of his family situation. Maybe he inherited $10 million. They don't know, and the district court took all of that into consideration. You cannot set up public policy rules about independent contractor and employment status. They even go into rank speculation about our motivation in this case. My goodness, Anthem saved tens of thousands, perhaps hundreds of thousands of dollars in FICA FUTA tax. We want his FICA FUTA tax paid, his Social Security tax paid, so that his widow can get a higher amount, as she should. Because they skirted their obligation. So let's let this particular insurance company just completely skirt the law as to how you're supposed to handle independent contractor status while we have others following the law.
It is not appropriate. As far as discipline, my goodness, at the time we answered interrogatories, we didn't have their documents. Now we have their documents. An employee evaluation form from Traces, M1. Tony has done better at arriving at 8:30 or so. I recently talked to him because he was coming in around 9:30. I told him 8:30 time was all the time, not just during critical projects. I still have concern about his reaction to problems that we deem urgent. He doesn't seem to have a nature and show urgency. This individual was treated like an employee. There are plenty of facts in dispute, and pursuant to this court's precedent, this case should be reversed, should be remanded. We should have a trial. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Warfield. Mr. Yerkes and Scroll, thank you. The case is taken.